You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Day when China cut interest rates overnight and the Dow Jones was up over 300 points. But in the final hour of trading, the bottom fell out and the market closed 200 points down. Investors say there's no need to panic.
I think that this is a normal and healthy correction that goes on in the market. I watch it very closely.
But others are wondering if there's another shoe to drop from China.
It's like a gamble. You gamble with it. Basically, you put your money in it. You hope and hope and hope that it goes up. And the next thing you know, it crashes.
Interest rates and the price of oil are also on investors' minds. Terry Sheridan, New York.
A new forecast says the federal deficit should hit $426 billion this year.
The federal budget deficit for the fiscal year 2015 will be smaller than we projected in March and will decline as a share of gross domestic product relative to last year's.
Congressional Budget Office Director Keith Hall says that would be the lowest deficit of the Obama presidency. Hall predicted moderate economic growth but warned that growth will be restrained by, quote, slack in the labor market. Congress will have to act to raise the national debt ceiling by mid-November or early December. We make getting your headlines easy. Join us online for more special interest stories, news, and headlines at usaheadlinenews.com. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
And good morning, listeners. This is Rich Scuderi with another edition of Modern Design. Today's Modern Design is going to be all about kitchens. We're going to talk about what your kitchen looks like now and what your kitchen could look like in the future. As my guest and show today, I have a very accomplished guest. His name is Cesar Duenas. He's a kitchen designer. He's been in New York City for many years. He also works down in Florida, and he's going to talk to us about kitchens and all about how we can improve our home and our kitchen in particular and be more functional. But before we do that, let's go ahead and see what the National Weather Service is telling us the weather is going to be. And a little birdie told me this morning it's going to be actually pretty good. And then I'm going to bring Cesar up to speak. Today it says it's going to be sunny with a high of 82 degrees. Tonight it's going to be a low, mostly clear, with a low of 55. On Thursday it's going to be sunny with a high of 82. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of 54. And on Friday, again, another day, 3 days in a row of sunny with a high of 82 degrees. And it looks like the weekend's going to be nice as well. Well, as I said, today is all about kitchens. And I'm going to see if I can bring Cesar up on the computer here. Good morning. Cesar, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Richard.
Great, great. Cesar, I've known Cesar for quite a long time now. He's a very accomplished kitchen designer. He's originally from Manila. And has been in New York City for the past, 18 years?
23 years.
And he's also going to be doing some work down in Florida. So why don't I introduce you to my listener, Cesar, and tell us a little bit about your history and how you started out and how you got involved in kitchens.
Well, my background is a four-year degree in fine arts interior design major.
In Manila, right?
In Manila.
Uh-huh.
The first 5 years was like starting up within a furniture showroom.
Okay.
And then for a year, and then I got into freelance interior designing, doing the whole thing.
Right.
And then in 1990, I left for Singapore and became a furniture designer for one of a manufacturing company for leather furniture for a Singaporean company where I became very good at, and then I got tired of doing just furniture like leather, Natusi products.
Right, right.
And then I came to the States, and then I decided that I will pursue my career as a kitchen designer, not really knowing that I will be a kitchen designer when I came to New York.
You still do design, but it's really become your moniker is that you're a kitchen designer. I think above all, right?
Well, when I came to New York, yes, that's what happened because that was available for that at that time when I came to New York in 1992, and I specialize in designing kitchens since then, and I dropped the whole concept of doing interior design for a while and then just doing it on the side as a hobby and concentrated on mainly just purely designing and consulting for kitchen design and layout.
Wonderful. And, you know, so many – right now I'm working on four different kitchens, and so many people, if they're going to make a change in their life, whether they're going to sell their home or just for their own enjoyment or just for functionality, it seems that the kitchen is the most popular project to do in a home for not only its value but also for, you know, for function and for life. And I think you're very astute. You know a lot about kitchens. You've been doing it for 23 years now. And I was curious of things that you've seen out there, things that you like, you don't like, mistakes that people make. The kitchen that I'm doing currently is a contemporary kitchen, so we have a lot of clean lines, and I really am getting more and more to like, even in my transitional projects, doing kitchens that have sort of cleaner lines. What do you like personally when you do a kitchen? Are there certain things that you like in, either in terms of layout or style of cabinets or, you know, things that you find that have worked for you or maybe not have worked for you?
Well, experience mostly with small spaces in the city.
Because you're doing city kitchens, so most of them are probably condos, co-ops, or apartments.
Yes, exactly. And uh-huh. The only way that it could be a big kitchen is like when my clients would be like buying the next door apartment and combining two apartments and making the kitchen bigger. And
now that has to be very complicated for you because you have to figure out how you're going to work all the utilities and how you're going to make things work and even like what codes would be, because obviously one apartment really can't have two kitchens, can it?
No, and the worst part is that if it's a kitchen that requires two of everything, when I have clients who need kosher kitchens, because
right.
You need to put two of everything, like for the meat and dairy, everything has to be doubled and
right.
All that. But basically, most of the kitchens, at least I would say 70% that I've done, are just regular standard kitchens, not like the kosher kitchens. So,
right, right.
So that's that. In terms of functionality, obviously, you have to work with that concept of the triangle between the refrigerator, the sink, and the stove where it's laid out. And
don't you think that that's very true? You know, I've had a couple of people, guests, come in my show, and they say, oh, the concept of the classic work triangle is no longer valid. But I absolutely agree with you. I disagree with that. I think the classic work triangle is appropriate. And the problem that I see a lot of times with people see, and Caesar, you probably could even define this better than I can because I'm a generalized designer. I'm not a kitchen designer like you are. But I think people often get carried away with the proportions of their kitchens when they're designing them, and they don't put the appliances close enough to them and the right proportion distance from them. And then when they actually do the kitchen, they get too involved in the surfaces and not the functionality, and then the kitchen doesn't work for them. Do you find that to be true?
That's correct.
Right.
Absolutely correct.
Some of the things that I see, and I'd love to get your opinion on it because I think you have very practical things. And you've actually recently, when we talked a couple of things that that I didn't even think of, is one is often people are still doing the farm sink as opposed to just the undermount stainless steel sink. And one of my clients recently said that they don't like a farm sink or an apron sink that goes to the outside. Because not only with that do you lose that cabinet where you'd have your sponges and so on, but a lot of people don't realize they get wet. Their clothes get wet when you have a farm sink because your body is right up against the sink.
That's correct, too. Yes, exactly. I think it's more for aesthetic look that if you like a farm sink. That's,
right.
That's when it comes to be like, you know, a client really loves a farm sink look, but
right.
In practicality, it's not the best.
No, it really isn't. And then you have to worry about that. I think people like to look that the apron like dies into, sort of falls into the cabinet. So that has sort of a specific look, as you say. But from practical standpoints, I've gotten away from the farm sink for that reason. I prefer a stainless steel sink. Do you feel the same way?
Stainless steel sink, a single bowl, because it's big enough.
Why did people have divided bowls? What was the original reason for divided bowls? I never really understood why they had why sinks had divided compartments. Was it dirty dishes versus clean dishes? I wasn't really sure.
It all depends on how big is the sink cabinet and also of what you really wanted. I think that double bowl sink is like smaller than the single bowl sink because you're losing that space.
Right, you're losing that.
A sink and a half.
Right, because you're losing that real estate in between with that dumb divider. You're 100% right.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. And not only that, it limits you from the big pots and pan to put on your double bowl sink because it's smaller.
Exactly. And, you know, how do you wash a stock pot if you have a double bowl sink? So I agree with you.
Exactly.
Stainless steel sink, undermount. Let's talk about all the time. I still see, and we talked about this, I think, the other day. I'm still seeing people putting granite in, and then they put an overmount sink over granite. Can you tell for our listeners that aren't sure the difference of undermount and overmount, how that is with the sink?
Well, undermounted sink, I think, is cleaner.
Right.
And you gain that extra counter space on around the sink.
Right.
And also, as far as being a cleaner look, you don't see the silicone on the over-mounted.
Right, the beads of silicone to keep it in, yeah.
Yes, to make it tight and to make sure that the water doesn't go and sit underneath the sink itself. Whereas in an under-mounted sink, you really hide all those.
Exactly. And not only I think is it a cleaner look, I think when you wipe down the countertop, the water runs off into the sink, whereas when you have a sink that's a drop-in or a sink that goes over the top of the granite or the whatever the surface is, you don't have that.
Yes, you just put everything and all your stuff that you want to slide through the sink will just go through right into from the counter to your sink.
So,
yes, with an undermounted sink.
So you heard that, listeners. It's not just me. A certified kitchen designer is telling you undermount sinks and stainless steel sinks. The other question I want to ask you is the ones that I've been working on lately, and this is sort of a new pet peeve of mine, is I like a sink to be as deep as it possibly can. I like, as you say, I like a sink that's non-divided, one bowl, and I like to be as deep as possible. Even if it could be between 10 and 12 inches, is there any sort of size if you had of sinks that you would want to be for depth, or am I missing something with that?
I'm not crazy with the extra deep because, first of all, for economical reasons that, you know, it's
expensive.
It's more expensive.
Right.
Correct. And remember, when you do an undermount sink itself, the thickness of your granite is an extra inch and a half or an inch and a quarter thick that's added to the depth.
Right.
And if you do the extra deep sink, sometimes you lose that space of storage space underneath your cabinet where if you wanted to incorporate like a pull-out garbage or your cleaning supplies underneath there. So if you do an extra deep undermounted sink, that's what you're going to lose. You might not be able to accommodate all those extra storage spots for your garbage pullout or for
right.
your Windex or for cleaning supplies. All of those is a factor to consider.
Right, because you lose it
for a very tight space where you really want to have all those incorporated in your kitchen.
Exactly. Cesar, we're just going to go to a couple quick commercials. I want to ask you to stay with us, and we'll be back shortly with more of Modern Design.
Okay.
Let Stowaway Self Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, I'm Sharon Skibbe of CompuPay Payroll. The Chamber is a great way to connect to other businesses within Hunterdon County and build strong and lasting business relationships.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And we are back with Modern Design. My name is Rich Scuderi. If you're tuning into our show for the first time today, we started Modern Design back in January of this year, and we've been doing a lot of shows. It's somewhat Hunterdon-centric because we do a lot of work in Hunterdon, Somerset, Middlesex, Union, and Essex County. But we have listeners all over the country. I do sometimes get calls in my show later in the day from out of the country. We had a caller recently from Australia that wants me to be a guest on her show. So that's something that's kind of exciting. And we try to bring you the best. And one of the things we do in Modern Design is I bring you the best resources. And one of the best resources I know for kitchens is Cesar Duenas, with 23 years of experience in kitchen design, and answering a lot of our practical questions as well as aesthetic questions on what he's seen in the 23 years he's been doing kitchens in Manhattan, and you know, making decisions that are wise decisions. Again, a kitchen has to be as beautiful as it is practical, because if you have a beautiful kitchen but it doesn't work well for you, then you're nowhere, don't you think, Cesar?
That's correct.
So going back to where we were talking before we had the commercial break about depths of sinks, what would you think would be an adequate depth for a single ball sink?
The regular 8 to 9.
Really? Really?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's something that's good to know, I think, as far as of that.
If you're limited to your cabinetry and you don't have a specific cabinet for, like, a pull-out garbage to hide somewhere,
right,
then you're good to go with a extra deep sink bowl.
Right.
But if you're limited, especially coming from my experience with the New York City apartments, that's what I've said.
Right.
I have to incorporate everything.
Right, in a small space, and you have to do like double and triple function. So that bigger bowl was going to take up the space where you'd probably put garbage. Typically, my kitchens tend to be just a little bit bigger because they're country kitchens or bigger homes. So usually the cabinet to the right is usually the or the left is usually the pull out garbage. So I've usually had that extra space to do a deeper sink. But I guess the sink could probably, as you say, the cost is going to be more. Stainless steel has become very expensive.
Yeah.
But also that, you know, if you have the clearance to do a deeper sink, it might just be easier to wash a pot. And on that and clearance, do you have any preferences as far as faucets are concerned for sinks? I see the sink faucets getting taller and taller. And then I also see there's a controversy whether you should have a pull-out sprayer as part of the faucet or should be a self-sprayer. What do you like?
It all depends on each individual's taste.
Okay.
And I find the pull-out single-hole faucet with the spray is more modern and contemporary.
It is.
Versus the one that has, like, a left and right control. And sometimes it's just easier to do the single hole faucet because you have one control to deal with when your left or right hand is busy with another.
Right.
And also you have to consider a single hole faucet is like either to be installed either on the left or right side, which is of course a preference on your customer or client's need, if it's a left-handed or right-handed.
Right-handed, right, exactly.
So that's all. And the bowl itself, sometimes the biggest bowl I find is like the D shape, where the front to back dimension is like bigger, or I would say deeper front to back, as opposed to a regular rectangular sink where you could put your your faucet in the middle, smack on the center of the bowl.
Right, right, exactly. How do you feel about, and I talk about this all the time, about having a soap dispenser? Because, you know, before you put granite, you have to give your faucet when you template because you have to know how many holes there's going to be cut. How do you feel about having the soap dispenser built in and as a pre-cut hole in your granite as part of the faucet? Do you like them or you dislike them? Because
I honestly,
yes.
My personal kitchen, I hate it.
So tell me why. Because 50% of my clients say, absolutely, I want it because I never want to see like a container of Dawn out while I'm having company over. So I want it there. And then 50% of the people say, no, I don't want it because what happens is I've had it in a previous house and it gets sticky and then you can't get the soap out and it's a mess. So I'm torn on it. What do you think?
I think it's not easy to refill it underneath the counter or
right.
Underneath the cabinet. That's my problem with those.
Well, that's a good point, right? Refilling is not that easy.
Yeah.
But a lot of people tell me that if they've had them in the past, they get sort of gunked up because it is soap and it's hard to get the soap out over time.
That's true, too.
Yeah. So you'd rather not have a soap dispenser as part of the package and then just have the soap underneath, do what you have to do, and then put it away.
Yeah.
And
or
then,
get a nice, real nice soap dispenser.
Right. Oh, like a pretty dispenser that you can keep out on the counter that's yep. decorative. That's a very good idea as well.
Yep.
And then in terms of the faucet, I'm also torn too. A lot of my kitchens, I mean, most of my work, as you know, has been more traditional. But in the past couple of years, because things have become so much more contemporary, I'm doing more of a contemporary look. So then the faucet that the sprayer that's attached is much, as you say, is much more of a contemporary look. The one thing that I'm concerned about is that I have heard over time that the sprayer loses some of its power. Do you find that to be true, or do you think that's true or not necessarily?
It's true.
It is. See, that's what I was worried about. That's why I always talk people into having a regular faucet. I like a high faucet because I feel also to put a stock pot underneath, you don't want a low faucet. And then I like a separate attachment just as the sprayer. So I would have the hole for the single faucet and then the hole through the granite for the sprayer. And I think that's, to me, the best scenario. Do you agree or disagree?
That's absolutely correct. Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I think that works for now. So if you say it's right, I'll keep doing it that way. So let's move on a little bit and let's talk about countertops. I've noticed there's been a very big shift in the past 5 years in particular. For the most part, when I started in the business 18 years ago, people at that time, 18 years ago, not everybody had granite, believe it or not. Even nice homes, they had Corian. 18 years ago, most people, if they had an upgraded kitchen, I mean, a lot of people had Formica. But if you had an upgraded kitchen 18 years ago, you had Corian, and you know, people either loved or hated it. I hated it because every job I went on that had Corian already, there was a burn mark, there was a stain, there was a problem. The sink would be stained. It was terrible. What's your experience been with Corian?
Well, there's one advantage with Corian. It can be repaired.
That's true. That's true.
And the disadvantage, again, is like it can burn, it can scorch.
Right.
And it's always dull. It's
right.
Like, you know.
There's no sheen to it.
Some people like that kind of effect, that there's not, that's it's not shiny, it's not glossy.
Right.
That effect. And it's consistent in one color.
Right.
Either solid or speckled, that's it. In granite, you have you could go for a busier speckle or grainier.
Right.
Or because you can, and some clients don't like colored granites or countertops at all. That's why they do that man-made surface.
Right, right.
But practicality and price-wise, it has come to a point where both materials are just as much as spending for granite and for Corian or any other man-made solid surface.
No, it's very true. So as I say, when I started in my career, people had Corian, and most of them were, I remember anybody that was particularly happy. Everybody had a story of a burn or a repair. And, you know, you could repair it, but it wasn't an easy repair, and you had to wait for somebody to repair it. So in the beginning of my career, I saw lots of Corian. Or, you know, laminate countertops at that time that had the look of granite but weren't granite. And then slowly what had developed is people were upgrading. Their first upgrade was they were going to keep the cabinets they had, but they wanted to upgrade to granite, and they wanted an undermount sink. So that was what some of the things I was doing at the beginning, and granite was the new standard. You felt like you were successful. You did something. We have granite countertops. And 18 years ago, that was really the thing to do. And back then, we saw a lot of dark green. We saw a lot of ubatuba, verde butterfly, and a lot of, I think, darker colors, actually, because a lot of the cabinets back then were more of cherry or, darker surfaces. Or even as it transitioned a little bit, a lot of that honey spice maple with a darker countertop. But then things evolved a little bit, I think. Early on, I saw a lot of very detailed edges on granite, a lot of OGs and double OGs, and very complicated things. Whereas today, I see people cutting into the granite a lot less. And I often talk people into getting the standard edge, one of the standard edges, as opposed to doing a very detailed edge for two reasons. One is there's a big cost savings in doing that. But number two, I feel when you cut into a stone and you're paying for an inch and a quarter stone and you're cutting into it now, you're cutting into what you're paying for and the beauty of it. And I'm kind of curious as to your thinking about the granite material and having how you would finish it off.
Polish and the simplest edge on the front.
So you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there, because don't
not
you feel
so much of the bull nose, because it loses the thickness effect. It makes it look like it's thinner when you do the full bull nose front.
Right.
So that one is something that has to be avoided, that if you really want to make it look like it's more solid, thick.
Right. And what you're paying for is material, so why would you cut into it? Do you agree with that?
Yes, that's correct. And those OG
edges
are very expensive.
Expensive, yeah, very expensive.
Yep.
So I agree. I like to see the thickness of the stone, and as long as it's not sharp on the edges, I like to keep as much stone intact as possible. Have you ever worked with a thinner slab of granite for a kitchen?
Well, in the first couple of years, it's the 3/4 inch thick.
Wow.
And then they double the front.
Right.
And then you would see a line, a seam that's like on the front, like being it an inch and a half thick. So that's like something that was like used before when an inch and a quarter was not so popular in
right.
the first couple of years when I first started.
Right.
And it's kind of nice, too, because it's not so thick around the sink.
Right.
You do an undermounted sink.
Sink, right.
But now everything came out to be just like an inch and a quarter thick, and you have that consistency from front to back and around the sink.
And it seems to be sort of inch and a quarter seems to be sort of industry standard now. So I think we're on the same page with that. And also, I see it sort of shifted, I think, from when granite first started becoming popular to the masses. You saw mostly very static patterns, a lot of, ubatuba, verde butterfly, I'm trying to think of some of the others, Baltic brown, some of the ones that were very static. But then we started to see, I think, as it got more popular, more involved stones, other types of granite, other types of stone. We started seeing marble also being used as well as granite, which I don't always think is a good soapstone and other things being used. But even before quartz, because I think quartz has even really gotten more popular in the last 5 years. But as granite started to evolve, I think we were seeing stones with bigger patterns. And I'm curious of your perception of that, because I feel that a lot of people, especially if they're coming into a designer, don't necessarily have the vision of when we go to a stone yard of what it's going to look like. And they'll see slab and they'll say, oh, this slab looks like a piece of art. It's gorgeous. And then they'll get it down and they'll absolutely hate it because there'll be so much going on that slab when it's flat that it fights the floor that they've done and it fights everything else. How do you feel about if they were to do a very busy granite or something that has a sort of a broader, very wide pattern?
Well, I try to avoid the swirly type granite, because if you were to end up like in a galley kitchen,
right?
Those I would be okay to use like something like that kind of pattern on the granite, because it's a straightforward cut when you have like an L-shaped, U-shaped kitchen,
right.
you have a turn, and then you can't get the counter in one
piece.
One piece, and
right.
you have to have a seam. How would you feel about like having a seam so visible?
Right.
If it's like a swirly type of pattern on the granite, where
right.
where it meets, like it's kind of more obvious that this is like two pieces put together. So if it's something like that kind of layout on the kitchen, I would prefer to use like a speckled granite or a lighter granite with less pattern going on.
Right, right. Don't you?
I would totally avoid the swirly type where
right.
the seam will totally be obvious that two pieces were put together in an L-shaped counter or something like
and
that.
And often people have an L or U shape. I mean, that's a very common in bigger kitchens.
Exactly.
That's a very common thing. Caesar, we're just about to go to a very quick news break. I'm going to ask you to stay with us, and we'll be back shortly with more of Modern Design.
Okay, thank you. I'll be here.
USA Headline News. I'm Ron Taylor. Virginia police are searching for a man who opened fire on a TV crew during a live broadcast this morning, killing two people.
We want the people that come here to say that was...
Okay, not sure what happened there. We will...
Reporter Allison Parker and videographer Adam Ward were both killed. Channel WDBJ7 confirmed on Twitter that a shooting happened during a live report and that they are still trying to figure out exactly what happened. During the live broadcast, the reporter was wrapping up a tourism interview with a woman in a community about 50 miles southeast of Roanoke when gunshots suddenly rang out. The reporter and her guest are seen running from the area as the camera shakes and falls to the ground, catching a glimpse of what could be the gunman. As markets open on Wall Street, U.S. figures are up. Worldwide stock markets were up and down today. Japan's Nikkei is the day's biggest success, gaining more than 570 points to close, up more than 3%. This is USA Headline News.
The word is spreading. Ovation Cell Therapy really works. The thousands of letters, referrals, and survey responses about Ovation Cell Therapy tell it best.
I'm using the Ovation products because I've gone through chemotherapy for breast cancer. I started with the Ovation Cell Therapy when I lost the majority of my hair after my first treatment. That's when I began using the Complete Ovation System. I'm getting compliments on how great my hair looks. I am truly amazed and completely satisfied with your product.
Ovation Cell Therapy is completely safe, non-toxic, with no side effects, and with just a simple rinse-out type application helps grow your hair thicker, stronger, and longer. Make your hair healthy again. Log on to OvationHair.com and enter USA News at checkout for a special introductory offer. That's OvationHair.com. And remember to enter USA News for your special discount. OvationHair.com.
Ovation is so good, it's guaranteed.
And we are back with Modern Design. I have as my guest, very happy to have as my guest today, Caesar Duenas, who's a kitchen designer, has 23 years experience in the business of kitchen specifically, and more in terms of interior design. And we're talking about practical solutions for kitchens and some of the things he's seen through the many, many kitchens that he's done, and maybe help some of the listeners out there, some of our listeners, maybe make better choices when it comes to kitchens, you know, more practical choices when it comes to kitchens. If you'd ever like to come visit me, I'm conveniently located at 1 U.S. Highway 31 in Flemington, New Jersey. I'd love to answer your questions in person. And also, don't forget, we do have the afternoon show today from 2 to 3. We have Modern Design 2 Design Dilemmas, where you can call in studio later today at 2 o'clock at 908-237-0410 and ask me your design questions live on the air. So I'm back to Caesar, and we're talking about countertops and the evolution of countertops during both our careers. And we were talking about when people choose to maybe do a Jupirano or more of a stone that has a large pattern to it or something that's very patterned. I think often people do not have, you know, it's very daunting, I think, when you take people out to a stone yard, Caesar, and because people get caught up in what's the most beautiful. And they also have to think of how it's going to work in the application. When you look at slabs, you know, they're hanging, you know, on its side, and they have a very different look than when they're actually in place, don't you think?
Yes.
And people have to, you know, keep in proportion to the pattern should be in proportion to the size of space you have. Like you say, that would work well if you have a large pattern, if you're just doing a single run. But when you have a kitchen that has many different facets or turns, maybe you wouldn't want something like that. So you have to keep that in mind. And a lot of people that have floors that are some sort of a travertine or a stone or even just a tile or a slate, you don't want there to be a there's such a dedication to the patterning of the countertop that the floor clashes with it. You want it all to flow together. And that's one of the, I think, the biggest things in interior design or designing a kitchen is that there's so many beautiful surfaces there, but you want to be able to balance the surfaces so that it all comes together and the end result is something really beautiful, don't you think? And you brought up something that I wanted to go to next, which I talk about a lot. There are a lot of new finishes when it comes to granite right now. The classic finish is polished, where the granite has a polished surface. It's shiny. There's layers of protection. I will say that I always, always, always recommend polished granite. Some people may feel that that it's slightly dated or they just want to try something different. There are some new finishes out there. One of the finishes that I'm seeing a lot recently is leathered. And that's where the finish is somewhat dull. It looks like honed, but it also has like a level of texture. And they call that leathered. And I'm seeing that more and more now. I wouldn't even mind that on a bar or maybe a piece of furniture. But I don't necessarily like that for kitchens because, number one, I don't think you get the same level of protection you do with polished granite. And number two, I think a finish like that could become dated at times. And I always tell my listeners, when you're doing a kitchen, when you're doing your hard surface, do things that stand the test of time because they're going to last longer than the style lasts. So you want to have something that's going to transition and not hate in 5 years. But also, people have been asking me a lot for honed. I did cave in once. I had a lady who came from Hoboken to this area, and she wanted more of an urban look. And she wanted to do absolute black granite, but she wanted to hone it because she really wanted soapstone, and I wouldn't give her soapstone because soapstone is too soft, I think. It wouldn't have been a good surface for her. So I honed the absolute black. It looked really beautiful. But I noticed that if you put your fingers down on it, even the oils on your fingers showed. If you put your keys down on it, your keys scratched. And I was wondering of what your experience have been with the different finishes and, you know, have you had some failures as well as successes with different finishes?
It's a personal taste of a customer.
Right.
Client, and I specifically would point that once you hone a granite, you'll be responsible for, like, accepting the fact that at some point if you put, like, a tomato sauce or something or a wine,
right,
it might stay there, like, because it becomes porous.
Sure.
When you honed it.
Right.
And then again, when you hone granite finish, this is what the cost would be added on a regular polished granite.
Right. Right.
So these are the factors that all has to be mentioned upfront to you, to the customer.
Exactly.
This is something that you have to understand, that there is a possibility that you might stain it, that it could be more subjective to staining and all that. So
exactly. And what do you think of that new finish? Not new, it's been around, but it's becoming a little bit more popular, that sort of leathered look.
I liked it, but not for kitchen.
No. Don't you think that would be better if you had like a den that had sort of a bar or like another area, or if you were putting it on a piece of furniture or something like that? That it's just not, I just not for a kitchen. I tend to agree with you.
It's
to me,
correct.
Yeah.
For a bar counter that's,
yes,
like by itself in one small area of is good, but not for a whole kitchen.
Exactly. And you know, also, I think the leathered finish, because it's the newest thing in town, I think it's going to look dated in time. And, you know, I don't think that anything that's classic, like classic polished granite, is really going to be ever out of style. I mean, there'll be new things, new colors, but for the long term, I think it's your best solution, and it gives you the most, I think, the most practical surface.
Yeah, practicality, the polished granite.
Now, before we go on quartz, I wanted to just talk about other surfaces. We're talking about granite generically, but, you know, not everybody uses granite. Some people like to use marble. I mean, Carrara has become incredibly popular for islands because we're seeing so many white and black kitchens. So a lot of people will do absolute black granite around the perimeter with white cabinets, and then they'll do a black island, and then they like to put Carrara on it. Although I'm also starting to see Calicutta, which I like a lot. And if people don't know the difference between the two stones, Carrara marble is sort of white with gray veining. It's very beautiful. I love it. It's probably my single favorite, although I don't know that I would use it in my own kitchen because I'm afraid of the staining. But Calicutta kind of has the white and the gray, but it also has sort of striations of brown in it. And it's also, I think, quite nice, especially if you have maybe some, you know, dark wood floors or you're balancing off of that. I think that's very, very pretty as well. But a lot of people now choose to do surfaces, whether it be soapstone or marble or other surfaces other than granite. And I'm curious of what your take is on that.
Marble, you have to be prepared at some point that it has to be repolished.
When you say marble, you know what I envision? I envision a ring of red wine. That's what I see. I see somebody, you had a guest, you're all drinking, you get up the next morning, and there's that ring of red wine.
Or tomato sauce.
Or tomato sauce, yeah.
No, with marble, at some point, it loses if it's a polished marble, at some point it will really lose that polished, shiny effect on a marble, and you would have to have it repolished again.
Right. More so than granite, right? More
exactly,
so than, right.
Exactly. It becomes porous and all that. And it cracks because it's a softer substance, material than granite.
Granite seems to be, to me, it's just perfect for kitchens. Anything else that I've worked with that wasn't granite, I always had that trepidation that over time it wasn't going to last. I did a very big house in Far Hills about 10 years ago. And the woman really, and it was very beautiful. I tried to talk her out of it, but she wanted her center island to be really beautiful butcher block. And she got this gorgeous butcher block, which we put in, that had sort of a lacquered finish over. It was dark. It went on a black island and it had sort of a cherry finish to it. And I said, you are going to hate this in 5 years. It went down. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Caesar, in 2 years, it looked terrible.
Well, a butcher block, you said?
Yes, butcher block on the island.
Well, is she a baker?
No, not particularly. She just liked the look because it was just something that was very rustic, and she liked the look. And yeah,
my concept of a butcher block is like for hygienic reasons. It's not as clean as I would recommend for a kitchen.
Right, right. They do say some of the woods, though, have antimicrobial qualities. I had read some things that these certain woods have antimicrobial, like built-in antimicrobial qualities. And they didn't do just a sort of a generic butcher block. They did something that was really quite nice. It was done in planks, and it was like sort of a cherry color. I mean, it was really beautiful. But it looked, within 2 years, it really looked worn out.
Yes, it will. Yeah. And what if you're doing some cutting and all that?
Right.
It will really show the cuts on the wood and all that.
Right. So I go back to that your best bet is to stick with granite, stick with something that's somewhat consistent and definitely polished. I really feel that that's the best bet, and I think we're on the same page with that. I wanted, before we move on to the next topic, I wanted to finally then talk about quartz, because in the last 5 years, even the last 2 years, I have more of a request for quartz now than ever. And could you tell our listeners your take on quartz and the difference between quartz and granite?
Quartz? I think it's a mistake.
I agree, but why don't you tell your spiff on that, what you think?
I think it's a mistake because it's expensive, and once you stain it, it will stain. Whether they say that it's not going to stain, it will stain, and I had a bad experience about that. And no matter what the granite or countertop manufacturer or fabricator did, it's still there. It will still show that mark that it did stain.
Wow.
Especially in the city when people are like ordering Chinese food, you know, you leave right. your
containers on the table.
On the table. Right. And not only that, the paper bag that has oil in it. And
yeah,
that,
yeah.
It's going to be there forever.
And I don't think people realize that quartz is more expensive than granite.
It is, yes.
And to me, you know, there are some applications where quartz does work. I had I have a kitchen right now where it's a very small kitchen. It has very dark cherry cabinets. And the only countertop that could possibly work on here is white. Now, I'd love to do Carrara or Calicutta, but they're just, you know, they're just not going to, they're just not going to be possible for this application. And the woman doesn't do much cooking, but I think I'm going to probably have to do like a white quartz, because the one thing about quartz being man-made is that you can have it be very specific. So with, like you were saying, Caesar, whereas granite is naturally occurring, so you're going to get... Right. No, but with granite, you have, you know, fissures and fossils and all sorts of things going on, and that's its beauty. Where you have quartz, at least, you have, because it's man-made, it's more consistent. But still, in all, I would say 99% of the cases, I really think that granite is the way to go.
Yep.
Okay, Caesar, one more quick set of commercials. We'll be back, and then we'll wrap up. I thank you for being patient, and we'll be back with a little bit more of Modern Design.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington, or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disitel, ceremony officiant with CelebrationOfALifetime.com. I joined the Chamber so I can get to know you and what you're all about, and I hope you want to get to know me and what I'm all about. Then we can celebrate what we can do to make Hunterdon County better.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And we are back with Modern Design. We are talking today in Modern Design with all things kitchens. And I'm with kitchen designer extraordinaire Cesar Duenas, has been in the business for a long time, has a lot of international experience overseas, and also many years in Manhattan and now going to be in Florida. And talking about, you know, things that you can do, practical things for kitchens. I think people get way too caught up on the fashion of kitchens, don't you, Cesar? And not how the kitchen is going to work after it's done. And then people get in trouble because a kitchen has to work, both for your own, you know, living and also for resale. If a kitchen doesn't work, it's not going to do well. I wanted to, because it's going so quickly, we're almost at the end of the segment. I wanted to talk a little bit about appliances, because I know you have very definite, and I picked some of my appliances based upon not only my own house, but also more recent jobs and some of the recommendations and things that you say and that you've liked. I want to start with talking about dishwashers and what you like, what's worked for you, what you recommend, and you know, what you see as far as dishwashers are concerned.
Stainless steel inside, interiors, because it's quiet.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have the German make dishwashers, because some of the newer models on the local dishwashers do came up with the same kind of stainless steel interior that makes it quieter when it runs. That's, I think, the best important thing
right.
I could recommend, because if you wanted the dishwasher running while you're still watching something in your living room, you don't want to hear like a noisy dishwasher running.
Absolutely.
And make it as clean and flush with your cabinet
as possible. Very true. Very good point, actually.
Yeah.
And that's the trend now, that everybody has, you know, we're all going for the counter depth refrigerators and everything to be flush, right? The look should be just very, very in line, correct?
Correct. And if the controls on the dishwasher has to be hidden, that's the best thing or look that I would recommend, the hidden controls inside the dishwasher. I think those are the best ones. It's a little bit more expensive, but I think it's worth it. Not just by the look, but I think for a cleaner, better appearance and less busy on how it would look next to your cabinet if you have a busy door style or...
Oh, no, I agree. And also sometimes you'll get, because you're touching it, you get fingerprints on where the buttons are. So if it's like, if it's exactly. just integrated, it just looks, it looks seamless and it looks smooth. I think that's very, very good. You know, I had gone into the city to the A&D building, and they were talking a couple years ago about trying to bring in, even though stainless steel is actually a classic, but trying to start bringing in some other surfaces because people are so set on stainless steel now, and stainless steel has become a very, you know, it's become more expensive. The materials become more expensive, about what the next generation was going to be for appliances, what we're going to see next. And what they were trying to come out with, which I don't think has really taken off at all, one was colored glass, that appliances... would be colored, but there would be glass. Like they would do white again, but white would be, it would be a glass front, and it would be white, or it would be blue, or it would be a color. I don't think that's taken off yet, but do you think there'll be an evolution beyond stainless steel as the next phase for looks, just so people change their appliances or have a new look?
For a modern contemporary look, I would go for it.
Okay.
And I'll make sure I have like a gallon of Windex
to keep it clean, right?
Exactly. But I think it's gonna look good and nice because it's a new thing.
Right, it's fresh.
And if it's a modern kitchen,
right.
I think I will go for it.
Right. As something a little bit different. Because you know, let's face it, stainless steel is not that easy to keep clean either, is it?
I'd rather do a panel door on a dishwasher.
Do you like that? Do you like the integrated look where they cover the appliances with the
absolutely.
Do you?
Yep.
I always say sometimes I think I'd have to sort of go like this to find out where my appliances are. but
it's less to maintain, to keep cleaning and all that when it's like paneled. And some people will, like the kitchen that I had in the city, in the Upper East Side.
Right.
People think, oh, you don't have a dishwasher. I said, that's
one. Right. You could barely find it. Right.
Like the cabinet.
Right. What do you think about flooring for kitchens? You and I talk about this a lot, and I always think that here's my rule of thumb for design. I feel that if your cabinets are going to be stained cabinets, I don't think you should do hardwood floors, because the woods together, if they're the same wood, they look terrible, and if they're different woods, they look terrible. So my rule of thumb is if you want to do a stained cabinet, then you need to do some sort of either, you know, a porcelain or a ceramic tile or sort of a stone surface for the floor. Or if you're going to do the wood, if you're carrying the wood through other places in your house, through your kitchen, then you need to do a painted cabinet. What's your thought on that aesthetically?
Okay. Personally, I like wood in the kitchen, wood flooring.
Wood flooring in the kitchen. That's what, yes, okay.
Because of... for some people who like to work on their feet, like barefoot, it's softer, it's not as cold and hard.
You know, that's very true. That's very true.
And using tiles or marble or something like...
a stone surface, right.
Any substance that's like, aside from wood...
Right.
The problem with those is like the grouting on how you will be able to keep up on maintaining a clean grout on the tiles and everything and all that.
Right.
So that is my main concern. And also, depending on the season or city where you are, if you're dealing with four seasons with winter and, you know, I think it's just too cold on your feet.
Right. But, there is radiant floor heat. I did do a kitchen recently and had radiant.
That's another factor to reconsider.
Wow, that was nice. It was February and we had nice radiant floor heat, and that was nice. I guess for me, I like both looks. In my own home, I have hardwood floors that go through the house and they go through the kitchen. So I opted to do a painted finish. But do you agree with me that if you have hardwood floors and then you have stained cabinets, that never really works out right aesthetically?
You're right.
And you could disagree with me. I don't, because I've seen it every way, and I like to give people a lot of options. But if let's say you have a dark hardwood floor and then you have cherry cabinets, oh my God, it's like a sea of brown. It just looks terrible, and there's no differentiation. Or there's a slight differentiation, and it looks like something's wrong. Or then you have, let's say you have light oak floors and dark cabinets, or light cabinets and dark floors. It just looks terrible, doesn't it?
It is, but there is a solution to that. You get something that's like totally the opposite on the countertop.
Right, to balance it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then if you do a hardwood floor and you do like a stained wood cabinet, by doing the countertop in a lighter color,
it's a sense of balance.
You should be okay.
And right.
You do like, I don't know, if you like stainless steel appliances because it's a lighter finish.
Right.
So it's not old brown or old dark brown or light wood or and all that. So it is also kind of nice when you do floors in wood that's like dark and then lighter finish on the cabinet door finish.
Right.
Make it look like it's different. Or do it the other way around, lighter floor on a wood finish flooring and then make the cabinets a little bit darker so it floats.
Right.
This is all a matter of your
personal
taste,
yeah.
Especially for the customer, for the client who's going to be there every single day and who's going to be working in the kitchen 7 days a week.
Right. And I also like when the island's a different color. I like to do the perimeter cabinets in one solid color and have that, but I always like the island to be a different color. You know, I have all the stone surfaces be the same, but I like the island to be a different color. I just think it kind of, it's the center and it offsets things a little bit.
My opinion on having a different color on the island, I think that one is to each its own.
Right.
And I think that's a very good idea, and I think it creates a very nice drama in the kitchen.
In the kitchen, definitely. And then, we're getting to our last minute here. I wanted to ask you about lighting, because I know you have definite ideas about that. How do you feel about under-counter lighting?
It's a must.
Right. Anything that you've seen recently? Lighting's gotten so better with all this LED stuff, I can barely keep up with it. Anything you've seen that you like with under-counter lighting?
Low voltage.
Uh-huh.
Low voltage under cabinet lighting, that you have a dimmer where you could control high, low, and all that.
Right.
And then, of course, you still need one. You really have to have like the lighting on the ceiling where you could really use as a general.
Oh, sure. You need overhead room lighting. No question about it.
But working in the kitchen counter,
right?
I think those under cabinet lighting helps a lot. Like to see what you're doing properly.
Right. So not only is it a good task lighting, but also, to tell you the truth, when you're entertaining at night and if you have them on a timer like you, not a timer, like on a dimmer like you suggest, it's a beautiful ambient light. So when you're looking from your family room into your kitchen, it looks beautiful at night when you have that under counter lighting, don't you think?
Exactly. Again, that's part of the drama.
Exactly. Cesar, on that note, we are out of time. Thank you for being such a generous and gracious guest. I took notes while I was talking to you because I'm writing down some of your terrific ideas, as I'm sure many of our listeners will. And I ask my listeners to tune in to me again. I'll be back in studio at 2 o'clock, and you can call us at 908-237-0410 with your design dilemmas. Cesar, thank you so much for being a terrific guest.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, listeners, we'll see you back here in studio at 2 o'clock and with your design questions. And see if you can get outside today because it's really beautiful. We'll see you later. Here's the news.
USA Headline News. I'm Ron Taylor. Univision anchor George Ramos is giving his side of the story after he was kicked out of Donald Trump's press conference in Iowa yesterday.
I said, I have a question on immigration. He didn't say anything. I stood up. I started my question. He didn't like my question.
Ramos tells ABC's Good Morning America that Trump signaled for the security guard after he started asking his question. He was physically removed, though he was eventually allowed to return. The National Association of Hispanic Journalists is blasting Trump for having Ramos kicked out of the event. Ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street, U.S. futures are pointing higher. Worldwide markets were mixed today, with Japan's Nikkei gaining more than 570 points and the Shanghai Composite Index closing down 1.3%. Nearly 57 million people in the U.S. and Canada play fantasy football, and it's costing employers. Fantasy football players spend an average of 1 hour managing their team each week, and most are doing it on the job. That costs job providers an estimated $16 billion in lost wages, according to consulting firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. This is USA Headline News.
I had Belvita breakfast biscuits this morning. Then what did I do? Made my bed, fed my fish, got dressed, cleaned the dish, remembered to floss, but still didn't do it. Ran a lap on the